Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I am Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
This is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Rob?
I'm outside.
We are, we're all outside.
I'm feeling incredibly connected to London's nature.
Oh, you are? How comes?
Because we are outdoors at Camden Art Centre.
Yes.
And you can probably hear the traffic noise in the background.
Yes, but also the birds chirping.
And the, exactly, that is the combination of city,
London,
nature. Yeah. And it's incredible energy here, but it's a really beautiful garden.
You've been coming here for years, Camden Arts Centre, haven't you?
So I used to live just down the road in Swiss Cottage. I moved there, I think, in 2003. I lived there for about 11 years. And this is actually the centre, along with Maureen Paley's gallery, which were the two spaces that got me into contemporary art, into collecting, into loving artists. And I even did a kind of a fair down here in this garden once where we all brought things from our homes that we swapped. It was like a bric-a-brac kind
of
swap shop on a Sunday once with artists. And I swapped amazing things with like Carolina Chaintre and loads of different artists. It was very, very cool.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it was years ago, like 2005 or something. Yeah. And I love this garden. But today we are here with an amazing artist from Hong Kong.
Yes.
And we
He's
are currently
got a show here because there's an Emergent Artist Prize that's set up by the Camden Arts Centre for the focus section of Frieze, which is for galleries which are emerging under 10 years old. And this artist won the prize and was selected and now has his solo show at Camden Arts Centre. And we've come here to interview him, and it's incredibly exciting. So we'd like to welcome to Talk Art
Wong Ping.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How are you, Ping?
Thanks for having me. I'm good.
Of course. So we call you Ping Wong, but that's your first name's Ping.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
You can call me Ping.
Call you Ping. Ping.
Yeah, Wong is my family name. So
right.
There's a lot of Wongs in Hong Kong.
Is there?
If you call me Wong, it's like everyone's like, what?
Yeah. That's good. So you've been in London for how long setting this show up?
I was here in before the show start. I spent like 10 days here to set up the show, and especially, you know, the first day I arrived, I dug a hole in the garden. Hope it didn't ruin your favorite garden here.
that was actually the spot where my table was for the that was the exact spot. No joke, that was where I'll try and find photos of it. We have photos of it, but I had a stool just there, like a table there.
So we're all looking at a hole that's been dug in the ground in the shape of a heart. The title of Ping's show is Heart Digger.
Yeah.
And this heart signifies where you're going to bury the love of your life one day, right?
Yeah, hope so. Haven't found it yet, but just prepare. Preparation
for when you find the love of your life, you need somewhere to bury them.
Yeah. That's what I wrote a story about it. But yeah, it's by the door.
The story is by the door of the gallery.
So we can see that when we go inside.
So you got discovered by Camden Arts Centre because you were part of the focus section at Frieze. So how did that show come about and being there? That was October last year.
Yes, it was a surprise actually. Because I didn't know anything, you know, about the prize. The gallery didn't tell me. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, I was like very nervous setting up my work, some installation at the booth. You know, I think 2 or 1 hours before the opening of the fair.
Yeah.
And then I think Martin just pat my shoulder.
So Martin Clark, who runs Camden Arts Centre.
Yes, he pat my shoulder and said, "Oh, you won the prize." I said, "What?" And then I was like sweating like. Because I was fixing my installations, and then
so before Frieze had even opened, you knew you'd won the prize.
I didn't know.
No, but they allocated you the prize before the fair had opened while you're still installing.
Yes, I think 1 hour before the opening.
Wow, that's amazing.
They just, you know, the whole team just rush in and they took like 10 or 20 minutes for interview photo, you know, pictures, and they're all gone. It's like, I was like, oh.
Did that actually happen?
Yeah.
What was your install in the focus section?
It was a film, wasn't it?
Yes, it's called Fables 1, which is showing at the offsite for this show as well.
Yeah.
And I think 6 3D prints installation to go with the... which is extruded from the film.
From the animation?
Yeah, from the animation.
Because you work a lot in animation.
Yes.
How did you get into working that way?
I guess it's just accident. I was working in a TV station in Hong Kong, mm-hmm. and I learned how to use some software to, you know, do... I did some post-production for them, mm-hmm. like removing wires, you know...
From stuntmen and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, smoothing the skin of the actor or actress.
Uh-huh. You know. So they call that like 3D animation or something? Or is that a different discipline?
I think it's different.
Oh, okay.
It's more like post-production thing.
Oh,
it's
just like post-production editing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. Fixing some...
Making everything flawless.
Yes.
Yes.
Making the body look better, more hair from the actress and actors. So I did that all day long. And then I tried to use that skills to start the animations, uh-huh. which is completely, you know... not related at all, but I just try to use whatever I
And you
can.
Do that in your spare time when you got home as a hobby?
Yeah, definitely hobby. Right. So I upload online and...
It's Vimeo you uploaded on, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I didn't, you know, by that time I don't know nothing about, like, I know nothing about art, design or, you know, anything like that. So,
Well, you say that, but in a way I think maybe it's like subconscious or something. Maybe you've picked things up, like, over the... your childhood or growing up or something, because I feel like it's very connected to those disciplines as well, even if you didn't deliberately have that kind of training at the beginning. Or did you study art?
No,
exactly.
I study multimedia design, so okay, they try to teach you like softwares,
yes,
like Photoshop, you know, back in the day it's not very popular, but they try to teach you that. And
how old are you, Ping?
I'm 35.
So you grew up in a time when there wasn't the internet as much. So you had an experience of the world.
Yes, in the 80s.
In the 80s,
and in the 90s.
Yeah. But you spent a predominant amount of your career and life working on computer.
Yeah.
And you said, I read that you learned how to draw via an Illustrator program online.
Yes. And then I learned how to use that software to make animation. I just go to a find a book in the library and just learn it. I don't know, I think it's just like a hobby, you know, you have the desire to, it's just like, you know, playing basketball after work or something like that.
So yeah, that was your passion.
Yeah, that's the passion. I didn't have any like thoughts or consideration or planning at all. I just know I want to do it and upload it. I don't know why, but just want to put it up there. And
who knew that, like, all these years later, you'd be stood in London with a giant inflatable giraffe outside here? And also, when we
with
turned
you guys,
up at the gallery this morning at Camden Arts Centre, there's a huge heart, which is rotating with
but it's upside
flashing,
down in a suggestive fashion.
Exactly.
Coming out
at
of
the front of the gallery, which I love as well. It's a really... I've never seen Camden Arts Centre look so kind of exciting like that on the outside.
Yeah. So suggestive.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just talking about the Vimeo work. So you uploaded all of your animations on Vimeo, and then you... created quite a following, like a cult following to your stories and the fables. When you say it's about the fables, that's based on Aesop's fables or based on like
the fairy tales. I guess but fables is I started this series this path last year when I was doing commission for the new museum triennial. So that was the Fables one, how it made. I always wanted to, you know, make stories for kids.
Yeah.
And I thought about, you know, writing is the most important part in my work. I think I spend a lot of time writing rather than doing the animation by myself. So I always want to write a book. But at the end, when I finish the story, I just can't help, you know, just I want to make it in
now
in animation as well. So that's how I transit from there.
And how did this inflatable and the kind of sculptural side of it all come to be? Because obviously there's a big link to childhood, even looking at this inflatable. It reminds me of the 1980s when we had like big bouncy castles at people's birthday parties, you know, like where you would get to take your shoes off and jump up and down and be crazy. That's kind of what it reminds me of in a way. But how did that element of it, you know, come out of the digital videos and then come into the 3D, into the real world?
That's very luxury, like, birthday party. You know, in Hong Kong we don't have such space for bouncy castle
really?
Or anything like this.
It was really? A big thing when we were kids in England.
Really oh, really?
Funny. Yeah.
Oh, we don't,
so you never saw
we
a
don't
bouncy
have
castle?
I think we do, but it's like once, maybe once in a while, they have like an outdoor festival or
yeah.
something. But honestly, I never play anything
like this.
I never play. Yeah,
yeah
I never
yeah.
play with it when I was young. So,
so how did it come to be here? Like, what? Where did the idea for the inflatable come from?
You know, when I start my work in my bedroom and, you know, uploading, I don't have to worry about space. And then I guess like 4 years or 3 years after I doing this practice, I just, you know, galleries or institution approach. So I get a chance to make it in a physical space.
Yeah.
So that's when I started to, you know, extracting ideas from my work and then put it in, you know, like a physical space.
Wow.
I think that's, you know, I still, you know, learning, like trying to figure it out, like the reason or why
you wanted to
yeah,
do it. Yeah,
yeah. But I don't know. There's just some, I think when I started to plan my exhibition, it's always very visual, like in my mind, rather than, you know, meaning or I don't
I love
know, very
that,
improvisation. More.
Yeah.
Did that come from the visits here, though? So when you came and saw the visits, then you instantly saw in your mind's eye the work you wanted to create for the space?
Yes, when Martin invited me over to visit the garden, because I didn't know how it looks. And immediately I want to, you know, dig a hole and bury something.
Wow.
Some, I don't know, human or animals, I don't know. I just want to do it.
Yeah.
Because you see it on the movies all the time, right?
Yeah.
You just want to try, like, how to bury a person. Like, how hard it would be, you know.
Yeah.
I'm always curious. And we don't get a chance to do it in Hong Kong that
I
much.
I
just
think many people
don't
get a chance to bury people, thankfully.
No,
not
why,
just Hong Kong.
But even
yeah.
digging a hole, though. So why in Hong yeah. Kong could you not dig a hole, for example?
I mean, like, you can dig a hole in your backyard or in your garden, in your place. Just more space in here, in London. But
yeah.
in Hong Kong, you know, it's where to find a park.
Yes, I get you.
And
yeah.
if you get a park, there's, like, many people there. It's embarrassing, you know, to try. But so so
while
I just
they're having their lunch or something, you're digging yeah. a hole next to them. Yeah, sorry guys, sweating. Just got to do this. Yeah,
and then by that time I didn't know I want to do a heart shape or anything, but I just want that. But and then Martin said, yeah, let's do it. And
amazing.
And then when they show me the offsite at the Cross Street,
yeah,
they have like a long, very wide space at the back of the space, and I thought I want a giraffe neck here because it's too long, and that's how. You know,
it's pretty obvious you'd want a giraffe neck
that.
There when yeah. you see the space. But we're looking at one half of the giraffe here, which is the body going into the heart hole, and then the head and the neck comes out at Cork Street.
Yeah.
But this giraffe for you signifies what? There's a story that goes with this that you want certain people to be traveling through this to escape Hong Kong.
Yes, it's like a organic smuggling. Tunnel,
yeah,
how
okay.
to call it?
Yeah,
smuggling.
Like a smuggler's tunnel.
Yes,
yeah, yeah,
but it's like an organic one, so it will dissolve. So it's very environmental
friendly.
So
environmentally friendly smuggling escape tunnel.
Yes,
yes,
yes. Yeah, but I wrote the story, and I don't know. I put things together, you know, one day before the opening,
mm-hmm.
and that was. You know exactly what happened in Hong Kong by that time. Like, very, it's different every day, you know.
Yes.
Many news and stories developed in Hong Kong at the moment. So,
how do you feel about all that? What's happening over there? Where do you stand on all that?
I was in the protests most of the time, you know, as I think it's the same as many Hong Kong people. On the street every weekend or Friday night, you know. I don't know. It sounds like an impossible you know, mission, we can impossible to get the results that we want.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we just have to try to fight for it. Yeah, it's depressing, but it's also there's like a little bit hope to see, you know, how people gather together and the people.
It seems to be gathering strength more and more. And
also, yeah. I think art can really bring hope as well, and to sort of give people courage to continue. And, you know, we were talking to Hans-Ulrich Obrist the other day about that very thing, and about how in all these turbulent times in all different countries, because it's not just one place, but it's actually happening globally.
What Ai Weiwei's doing
and
as well.
Yeah, Russ met Ai Weiwei the other night and presented him with an award and for GQ. And it was, you know, it's very much, I think it's so important to have different voices making art, you know, to help people really, and to help our own ways of working out what we think about what's going on as well.
Yeah, but sometimes I was, you know, I have doubt about it, you know, especially when you're on the street, you know, facing the violence from the police.
Yes.
And, you know, seeing all the protesters, you know, getting hurt, you know, in front of your eyes, you know, on the street. It seems like, you know, I will question, like, what am I doing is related or help at all on the street, you know, at that moment when they, you know, people crash together.
Feel quite helpless, like, I guess, in that moment somehow.
Yeah, at that moment you would think, like, I don't know, should I, you know, physically train better? That seems help more at that situation.
Oh, like a physical strength?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, if
I can
fight better, or if I can, you know, have more protection, or, you know, I can boxing, you know, do a boxing.
But then sometimes you could say that, like, intellectual ideas are just as powerful as physical, you know, physical strength. So I guess in even this work or the work that you go on to make, I think that hopefully will take the message around the world like it already is. So
that
true. In itself is helping.
Yeah. And also because, you know, in China, I couldn't post my work in China. So that's another, you know, voice out to, you know, to send a message, you know, across.
Yes.
You know, using internet or pictures that can, you know, bring it, like, travel in the mainland.
Yes. Yeah. Amazing. Shall we head inside then?
Okay.
We have now gone into the Camden Art Centre and we're stood in front of a giant flat screen video installation with thousands of little toys of, like, chattering teeth with bright
big
eyes.
But they're all gold teeth. How many are there, Ping?
5,000.
5,000?
And it's weird. Did you paint on the gold teeth yourself, or is that something?
I sent it to a studio to do it. It's actually like golden foil rather than paint. So they have to stick, like, very carefully.
Where was that? In Hong Kong or here?
In China.
In China.
I sent it to China.
Wow.
But they did it really quick. Like 5,000, they do it, I think, within 2 weeks. But imagine they have to stick it in a glue and then...
Why did you pick 5,000, that number particularly?
Because in January, I have a show in Kunsthalle Basel.
Ah.
And I put 5,000 of them on the wall, like... A long haul of,
on a shelf or stuck
it's,
up.
It's actually in like a wall like this, and then they have the same like distance between each other, so it's like a grid of the toy.
Yeah.
And it's like on the whole like room of it. It's like double size of this
so
room.
So these will come off the floor here, and then they'll go to Kunsthalle and be on the wall. These
exact
ones.
It was in January. Yeah.
Okay. So are these the same ones?
Yeah. So after that, I just ship it, and I said, maybe just throw it there.
Like, do you know, in some ways, what that made me think of is this pile. Was it? I know people aren't taking them away, but Felix Gonzalez Torres has the sweetie wrappers. Have you seen the sweets? And you go in, and you can take a sweet from the gallery,
and
it depletes over time.
Yeah.
Maybe one day you would allow people to come and visit and take your chattering teeth away.
Yeah, this work is actually commissioned by the Guggenheim last year. For them. And it was actually got stolen quite a lot.
Really?
Oh, it did.
And then they have to put more like security.
No.
And then
that's amazing because people want to take the chattering teeth home. Yeah.
Maybe it's the gold. They thought it's like a real gold.
Yeah. Oh right, yeah, solid gold teeth on the chattering.
Yeah. And then once in a while, I got, you know, a private message from Instagram.
Yeah.
People showing off they took one
and tagging you in it.
Yes. And then I was like.
Do I tell the police?
they didn't know they shouldn't do it.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It
wasn't
quite
like they were stealing them.
Quite interesting that they didn't aware of it.
Yeah.
And they show it to me and tag me and all that.
That's funny. So the movie we're watching right now, what is this story about?
This is actually about an old man. his life, being kicked away by his son and daughter-in-law, and how he getting survived with the technology and you know, the depressing environment in Hong Kong. You know, the small home, you know, we don't have space. And actually the inspiration is that how I started to write this piece is one day I was in a park, riding my bicycle, and then I saw an old man, like a typical Hong Kong old uncle. He was dragging a huge bag of like black plastic, like rubbish bag.
Mm-hmm. A bin liner type thing.
Yeah, and then I feel like, you know, when I get past him, he was like actually throwing it down to the bin, and I saw some interesting color in it. I feel like, oh, I should check it out. So I wait until, you know, he walk away, and I take it out, and then it was like a huge bag of porno VHS tape.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it was like Japanese, you know, those Japanese VHS tape, and that was like my first experience for me. To not this time, but when I was young, the first.
How old was you then?
No, it was like 3 years ago. Okay. 3 years ago, right. But I mean, those porno tape reminds me, you know, when the first experience,
a nostalgic porn moment.
Yeah, the first experience, I catch those from my father's closet or something.
Yeah.
That's, and then when I checked the condition, they were perfectly kept. You know, the book, even the booklet.
He really protected them.
Yes.
I wonder why
so
he threw
it's
them
so
away.
Sad. Yeah, that's how I think. So I just, you know, rushed home and then started to write because it's quite sad. Like,
did you keep the porno tapes or did you throw them back in?
I wish. I thought about it. You know, I sit in the park with the huge bag of porno tapes. I said, should I take it? It was like so clean and all that. I don't worry about, you know.
Yeah, his bits all over it.
Yeah. So, so I was like, why he picked this moment to throw it, because it's so well kept.
Yeah,
and also we use internet or even DVD, you know, Blu-ray, why he picked this particular time. So then I started to write. That's how I work, actually. Like, I have to bump into something in real life.
And it triggers a thought, like a tangent story.
Yes.
Amazing.
And it's triggering memories of your own experience as well, so it's quite... It's quite personal in that sense.
So it's like always mixed with personal and imaginations.
Right.
So your style of animation, a lot of people have compared it to Tom Vesselman, Fernand Léger, the Memphis group. Have influenced your animation, or is that what someone's told you your animation's like and you've just realised?
I guess I just realised because I start off, you know, have no background on art or design or anything, and I don't feel interested back in the day when I started. I just have the desire, just wanted to know I want to make something. Mm-hmm. So I use my, you know, limited ability, what I've got, you know, to work it out. And then later on when I have, you know, chance to work in, you know, institution or to meet physical audience rather than, you know, online comments.
Yes.
And I get more, you know,
feedback.
Knowledge or feedback it reminds me of something. And then I check it out and wow.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, this is Russell Tovey and Robert Diamond from Talk Art, the arts podcast. And we're here today with Budweiser beer. And we're going to be talking about something very, very important to both of us, aren't we, Rob?
That's right. Budweiser, the king of beers, has joined forces with legendary artist Sir Peter Blake, the godfather of British pop art and someone that both of us have adored since we were kids.
I've loved pop art since I was a kid, and Sir Peter Blake has been a constant for me, alongside other pop art artists, the Americans like Andy Warhol, Roy Lichtenstein, Keith Haring. And I got into pop art, Rob, because I loved cartoons growing up. I mean, I still love animation.
But suddenly I discovered that so many artists were referencing comic strips and cartoons in their artworks, and I could go and see them in museums, and I suddenly didn't need to grow up. And Sir Peter Blake was one of these artists that meant so much to me. And I think people, if they don't know the name Sir Peter Blake, you would certainly know his work. The album cover for The Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club, Oasis's Stop the Clocks. These are iconic art historical moments that this artist has actually been at the forefront of.
And you've met him, haven't you?
I've met him, yeah, at the South Bank Show Awards years ago. I was there for the History Boys, and he was there, and I got incredibly excited and met him. But you've not met him before, have you, Rob?
I have. I've actually even been to his house and hung out with him and his wife, and I got to make an amazing print with him, which was a huge privilege, actually. It was a real career moment for me. So Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake have come together to unite, and they have created an exclusive limited edition beer can, which doubles as a collectible piece of pop art.
And it was on display at London's Truerman Brewery on the 23rd and 24th of March this year, if you were lucky enough to get there. And also, were you one of the lucky few that were able to get one of the signed beer cans by Sir Peter Blake himself? And there was something very special there, wasn't there, Rob? What was that?
They've actually made the first ever fridge frame, which kind of is reminiscent of what we would be, you know, accustomed with in terms of a museum exhibit. Yeah. But this fridge frame is designed to display the limited edition can of beer as a work of art, but also keeps the beer cool.
Okay, I need a fridge full of fridge frames because this sounds incredible. So Peter Blake's work adorns the cans with all of his eye-catching simplicity. It features the Budweiser's iconic red bow tie logo, but it's encompassed by the artist's signature and his use of block colours and icons. They unveiled this artistic can in all of its glory in one of these fridge frames, as Rob said, which is very exciting. The limited edition cans are available to purchase as a four-pack for a limited time only in selected Tesco stores nationwide.
Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake, thank you for bringing us this cultural moment. I love it when art reaches new audiences, and I really feel like this is going to go into everyone's homes, and is really joyous. So head over to Tesco, pick up a four-pack. Thank you, Budweiser.
But also, if you want to get this collectible piece of art at home, Budweiser also giving people the chance to own their very own exclusive fridge frame. Beer and art lovers can register their interest by visiting www.budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. That's budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. Budweiser and talk art with Sir Peter Blake.
You know. So in terms of animation, if you think about animation, were cartoons or computer games, were they like a big influence and one of the reasons why as a kid you were interested in that kind of process?
Video game, yes, but more like I think I'm more like a comics guy.
Okay.
I read a lot of like Japanese comics in school.
Is that like manga?
Yeah, manga. Yes. Yeah.
And are there certain like magazine titles that you were into, the manga titles, or is it
stories
just called
like characters you followed
characters
especially, or?
I don't know the Japanese name.
What, how do you say it in Japanese?
In Chinese, I know
Guguksat
is the Guguksat. Yeah, is the.
And what's that story about?
He always make comics about like a pathetic teenager.
Uh-huh.
And then how he, yeah, it's like a, how do you call that? You know, the guy would sit in the room, play
kind of like depressed, like.
No, I mean,
oh, no,
like
a bit like a geeky kind of.
Like geeky, but yeah, there's like a term
isolated.
In.
Nerd.
Nerd. Nerd.
But there's like a term in Japan. It's about, I don't know, you know, people.
What is it? How do you say it in Japanese? Someone to comment on it on our.
It's like zha lam, zha loi in Chinese. So,
okay.
You know, people just really addicted with comics or manga and animations, video games, all that.
Yeah.
I was a kid like that. So, yeah. But video games, I don't know. I mean, people compare.
This is the 1980s video games, your
yeah,
style, yeah.
Yeah. Compare it with like 8-bit style.
Yes.
But I guess it's just, it's funny because it's all come from my limited ability, I guess I would say, because I can only draw simple shapes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I know from the software.
So we're looking at a screen print that you've made for the show at the minute, which is highlighting the world that you've created with Heart Digger, your show, and we're looking at a giraffe's neck going into the heart in the ground and then going into this tunnel, and then we've got the upside down heart emoji coming out of the
Camden Art Centre
roof, and then we've got this creature here which is digging the heart hole or pushing the heart down.
Yeah.
And this would this have all been made as a like Illustrator on the computer?
Yes, I only know two software. One is the Illustrator to draw, and then After Effects to do the animation, just moving the drawing. So that's all I know. It's all simple shapes and color. And
I love the type font you've created for the word Heart Digger at the bottom of the print. It's really cool, that. Mm. Should we move through to the other space now?
Let's go to the next bit. So we're going into another room now where there's four beanbags on the floor with another screen showing this movie. What's this movie, this one we're watching now, this film? What's this one about?
This is called Who's the Daddy? I created this, I think, 2 years ago. It is about, my work is always like a diary of mixture of reality or, you know, any opinion that I got during a particular of time, so I don't really know what is the, you know, I don't always have one goal or one thing I wanted to tell. So it's always a lot of things going on. But one thing I want to, how I started to do this, it was, you know, back in the day, that was like an umbrella revolution in Hong Kong. It's like also like a protest 4 years ago. We occupied the street for 2 months, more than 2 months. And then, you know, the society went completely like depressed and silent about politics, because I think it's the depression from failure of the movement So I started to wonder, like, you know, there's like a very extreme opinion. Either you against it or you for it. So I started to look at, like, what about the people in the middle, like a mutual supporter, or they don't have, you know, any opinion in the society. And then I thought about, okay, how should I develop this idea? And then one day I thought, I want to do a research on how many percentage of a male's penis that swing to the left or right. I just want to know the percentage of how it
of
works.
The population.
Yeah, like
of the world,
like which side, Hong, which side,
where they sit. Yeah,
of the world. Like and I just started to
I'm
do
to
some
the left.
Research.
What are you?
I don't know, babes.
You don't know.
You don't know which side
you
hang.
Know.
Babes.
Do you do
about?
Shower? Like when you shower, you can
which
just
side
look
you,
at it.
Which side you hang to?
I've never thought about it.
Well, think about it now.
I don't want to think about it.
What about you? And then, where do you hang?
I think that's quite interesting, because I think that's. Mine is in the middle.
Oh, wow.
And then...
Okay, I'm a bit left.
So I was doing some research and I found a really interesting quote from Yahoo Answers, something like that. And then it says, when Western invent pants, you know, jeans and pants, because it's too tight, it affects the male part, couldn't sit in the middle. Because you have to pick side too.
So it has to choose a side.
Yes, so right. It, you know, later on, you know, there's like a, people cannot have a, there's like a no population of a straight in the middle, sit in the middle penis. Right. That's what the quote and the research said.
Right.
And then I started to think, what if I am like a typical, I mean, not here to stereotype, but like a typical Asian penis, which is so short that I can put it in the middle. I don't have to pick side. And am I the minority or...
It's an incredible conversation. Yeah.
So am I in the middle? Like, if I was that quote or research actually ignoring my existence. And I think that's what I want to say, and the situation of politics situation in Hong Kong, like, everyone like picking side, or even like left wing or right wing, but what about in the middle? Like people just ignore it, and then and that's how I started.
So you
to
have
write.
To, you're saying so like the penis has to choose left or right now. Yeah, but you're saying, well, what if you want to be down the middle and you are ignored? Wow.
Yeah, Because the research said there's no penises in the middle, the modern age.
But also, doesn't that suggest that Yahoo or whoever was doing that research was ignoring the whole of Asian culture, perhaps? Like, they weren't included in that research.
That's what you're saying.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is just terrible anyway.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of adopted completely, like, fit in my thought by that time, you know, the politics situations. Yeah. And that's how it goes. I just started to write again.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy you fit down the middle. That's nice.
Yeah.
That's
good. I don't have to pick sides.
How long does it take for you to make your animations?
About a month to 2 months by myself.
Right.
Yeah, because I do the voiceover or sometimes music and drawing and all that.
You use quite a flat Cantonese voiceover, don't you?
Yeah.
Why is that? Why do you? Because it's just.
Because it's embarrassing to listen to my voice. So when I try to record my voiceover, I remember at the first time, like, I guess 8 years ago, I was trying to do it, doing that, but the acting is so bad and I just give up. I just read it, like, as
flat as you can,
flat
but
as
monotone,
possible. Yeah.
Kind of.
So I'm not.
Neutral.
Yeah, so yeah. I'm not ashamed or, like, embarrassed to watch it. You know, when in a show, I have to watch it over and over
you
again.
You do have other people voiceover. I've heard a female voice. Or is that yours that you've just...
Oh, the Fables. That was the MacBook voice, the computer voice. Yeah. I just want a digital mother figure voice to tell
a
the kids...
A digital mother figure?
Yeah, to tell the kids the story. So that was in a Fable series only. All the other work, personal work, is just my voice. So.
That's really interesting because in the beginning of internet in my family household, we used to have AOL and, like, America Online. Yeah. And it was kind of like a package that you would download to the computer and it would do the whole thing for you. So it was very straightforward to log on to the internet. And I remember it having dial-up and you'd hear the noise going like, you know that. And then when you finally got in, it would be like, I can't remember what the term was, but it was something... I know one of them was You've Got Mail, obviously. It was like, You've Got Mail. And then it would be like, Welcome to AOL, or something like that. And it was the voice of Joanna Lumley, who's in Absolutely Fabulous. And the computer we had her voice on. And I remember thinking at the time, like, she'd become this kind of, like, the mother of the internet or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I loved the... Because I loved her, and I loved Absolutely Fabulous at the time.
I didn't know AOL stood for America Online. You've just, like, blown my brain.
Really?
All these years. I've never worked.
But I was quite interested in that idea of, like, and I also struggle when I'm driving. If you have sat-nav, I can't listen. If I have a male voice telling me to which directions to go, I can't concentrate.
I do mine in
so I have to have a female voice.
I get mine in a New Zealand accent for some reason. I quite like it.
You turn left.
I don't know if it's because I'm gay. I don't know what it is, but there's something about hearing a male voice. I get completely, like, I get
turned
lost
on.
In the voice. Not turned on, but I get kind of like lost in the voice. Whereas if I hear a female voice talking to me, then I can concentrate. It's really bizarre. I don't know what that says about me.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So what is this series of animations called? If that's the Fables, where are we now in your... Is this Fables 2, Fables 3? Or is this a series, or are these just seen as individual works now?
I think it's like a series, because when I did my research, you know, I always want to write something for the kids, and I think kids are the best to look at works like my work, but... All the adults or the parents always worry about it, you know, don't look at it and all that. But I guess when I see kids looking at my work, they don't have a clue, actually. It's just like overreact by the parents, you know, and they can see other stuff. You know, if we don't judge them by our adult brains.
Yeah.
So I always want to just start, you know, making work for kids rather than adults, because they are more interesting. And then,
and I guess their imaginations are freer, and they're probably more open to change and to exactly, which frees your creativity.
Yeah, yeah. Even if they see a make love scenes in it, they will see joy and crazy. Maybe they're happy, they're laughing at it. But as an adult, it's like embarrassed, you know, shame, or like, oh, that's, you know, they will shine from it. But I guess that's what sex is about. Like, we should think about it, like, look at it like a kid, rather than, you know, feeling shy or anything. And so I went to the library again and checked out all the Aesop's, you know, the big name fables and fairy tale. And I don't think that's quite practical in the modern society or modern world, you know. And then I just one day my name would be in it, like Wong Ping's Fables in the public library.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So
if libraries exist at that point.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
They will. We have to protect them, Ross.
Okay, me and you.
Yeah, we're going to work online. Hard on that.
Yeah, totally.
Cool.
Well, we ask every guest that comes on, we have two questions, they're very hard. If you could perform an art heist and you could steal an artwork from anywhere in the world, a touchstone artwork, and you get to live with it, what would that be and why?
That what, I can touch it?
You can take it home, like steal it. Yeah, it's like an art heist, like in a movie. We're going to get together, we're going to get a big truck, and we can take whatever work you want to take home from anywhere.
That's tough. Can I have a minute to think?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Have a think, drink your coffee. Ping's sipping his coffee at the moment and pensively thinking.
It's talk art.
Talk art.
What do we call it? Investigative journalism.
Asking the questions that nobody dares.
Talk art. Asking the questions that nobody dares to artists.
So anyway, so this show is on until the 15th of September, so you've not got very long. You might have even missed it by the time this has gone out. But this has been supported by the Camden Arts Centre Emergent Art Prize, which actually I myself, yeah.
I was about to say, didn't you put
yeah,
your patron
to it? I was one of the supporters for this art prize.
I was actually really proud of you when you did that, because that's actually like
I've
meaningful.
I've done it again this year.
Well done. Yeah, it's actually meaningful because you're helping emerging artists.
Yeah. So the money from that gave the winner, i.e. Wong Ping, the money to fabricate these animations more and to fabricate all the inflatables in the garden and to pay someone to dig a hole. So have you found your artwork? You racked your brain?
I think artwork for me may be quite wide, so I think I would like a chance to just watch a classical performance by Beethoven.
Yeah.
But I want to sit in there to watch it.
Like, in the middle of the orchestra?
Yes. No, I mean, even in the audience, yeah. Because I don't think no one exists ever listen even. We just listen to some other classical player to play it.
Oh, so like going back to when he wrote it, going to one of the original performances
of it. No one alive.
There's no record of what it actually sounded like.
We only listen to record that other players perform it.
Yeah.
We only listen to the record that other player perform it, but we haven't actually listen what he played, how he played.
Yeah, so what his intention
was. Original ideas. That's what I've been wanting.
That's so interesting. And actually, the classical music scores, there's so much instruction in them that in some way you'd hope that it was clear enough. But even the way you interpret that score, it's like reading anything, isn't it? Yeah. How we all have a different interpretation of it. Yeah, and no, I find that fascinating too. That is a good answer.
I love the way your brain works.
It's like you're seeing a cover band of Beatles, you know. But I want the original Beatles.
You want to be there.
I want to see the original, but, you know.
That's interesting. And also, it's a bit like the giraffe's neck, you know, going from one space to another space, because there is that element of time travel in your work.
Yes.
You know, these kind of like different universes that you can travel. You know, it's almost like we get transported to different time zones.
Because I believe you guys can take me there, because you asked the question. You said I can be.
We're going to do it.
Yeah.
Well, who are the artists that you respond to now, like music wise? Who do you listen to, and what artists, like visual artists, are you inspired by?
In art?
Right now.
Where now? Honestly, I don't really have a particular artist, but I think I like performance.
Art.
I'm interested at performance art at the moment.
But that's interesting, because even your answer to the art heist, being wanting to sit with Beethoven at the time he wrote it and hear what it sounded like, that's about the actual physical experience and the audio experience of being in the room. Mm. And we were talking last night about a singer called Celeste, who's a new kind of soul singer from the UK, who I think is one of the greatest talents of our time. And she has been recording these a cappella videos that are going online, and they are just mind-blowing. I mean, I watch them and I want to cry. She's so good. But she was playing live last night, and we didn't get to go to it, and I was saying that actually I've seen the video, and then we were like, yeah, but that's not the real experience, because the trouble is these days you see videos and you think you've seen it, but you have to go and experience things in real life, which is why performance art is
so
great.
You see art online and it's amazing, you get to see this art online.
Exactly.
Seeing your work in person, for example,
completely different experience.
You're going to see a photograph of the giraffe's head going into the ground, but if you're actually here and seeing it, it's a different thing.
Maybe that's the point I enjoy making installation or sculpture. You know, video, I can put it online or people can see it whenever they want, wherever they want. But for sculpture or installation, you actually have to, you know, be there.
In the space.
Yeah, in the space.
It also uses different parts of your brain. You know, to physically experience something in front of you and then looking at something on a screen, there's a very different part of your brain that's getting used. And I think they're both valid and both important, but I think that is one of the things that's so powerful about performance art, actually, and sculptural installation and things like that.
And also, you know, before I work in, you know, the art scenes, I have more friends, you know, participate in independent music in Hong Kong. Right. That's what most of my friends doing. And I always think, you know, when I see that they perform, music is like the best, I mean, so at this point, I think it's the best form of art for me, music. I don't know, because it stay with a person for a long time. Let's say if you are in a train going to work, you know, sometimes have you ever like have the feeling you want to listen to a song so bad, but totally, you forget to bring your
headphones.
Yeah. And you go into a shop to buy it in order to listen to can listen to the song totally that you wanted. It's like tickling in your ears or in the heart if you can't listen at that moment. And you know, it will stay, the song will stay with you, like in your life, be there with you, like maybe 20 years later you listen somewhere like randomly on the street, and you have memory, like emotion as well, and power or strength when you listen. But at the same time, when you see you went to see the band or the singer perform, it's like another thing, but they are the same, you know, same work, but they have different, how to call it,
qualities,
dynamic or live performance, or even in the CD or different places. It would just, I don't know, stay. But you know, it's quite rare sometimes, you know, when in the train you have the urge or decide to, I really want to look at that painting, I take out the phone, and it's, I don't get that quite often. But songs, I always have the feeling like, oh, I really want to
listen. Who do you listen to? Who your
I like for? Blues music, so it's like old time, you know, Sunhouse or forget those big name, like the old time country blues player.
Cool.
I like how,
like Garth Brooks, is he a country and western, like
he's a bit more contemporary, I think.
Is he?
Yeah. More like a Chicago blues, Sunhouse.
Cool.
Shit, that's quite stressful for me to.
Oh, don't worry, don't remember. Yeah.
To think about.
So the other question we ask all our guests is, "What is your favorite color?"
Oh, I like is it called pistol color?
Pastel.
Yeah.
Pastels.
Oh, pastel colors.
Color like this. Oh, I like this more like mint. Mint.
Mint. Yeah. Mint
color.
Pastel,
how do you call this?
That's
color?
A mint color. Yeah. Or spearmint. Like
spearmint green or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's in many works. Of my work, this
yes,
kind of color.
It's a lot of pastel colors, the pastel pink and the green.
And why that tone of color?
I think that color is quite, how to call it, something that's in the middle, like ambiguous. How do you call that?
Yeah, ambiguous. Yeah.
It's
like you were talking about earlier, in the middle.
Being in the middle, you like it.
Yeah, in the middle. So you kind, you know, sort of like people when
it's not a bold, it's like color, it's not a soft green color, it's a gentle color, just going down the middle.
Yeah, so it's like a typical green, you know, we used it to see in, you know, everywhere. So it's, I don't know, and it's soft, you know. I like pink, actually, like 2 years ago, but now for this year, this is my color.
Well, the overwhelming
color of the year.
The overwhelming message that I'm getting from meeting you is that is kind of togetherness, I guess, and unity somehow, sort of bringing together far right, far left, and then putting them to the middle, trying to get people to be a bit more in the middle and listening to each other, I guess. Mm. Would you say that's true?
No, I guess.
Okay.
Well, I don't care what others' opinion is. I don't want to, you know, I don't necessarily, you know, have to bring them in together, but I guess in my work it's always like open question. I don't have answer, but I see it happening, like in a weird time of the history
world.
Our world.
Yeah,
like that one, like the Who's the Daddy work, I mentioned about, you know, the Tinder experience, what that was happening during, you know, when I'm making the work. So, and also when you play it, it's like left and right as well. So I think that fits
like
in.
Swiping left or right.
So it fits in as well. So,
cool. Yeah. What's happening next for you, Ping? What's the next adventure in your career?
I'm opening a show in Shanghai, a solo show in Hao Museum in November.
Oh, congrats.
And then December, I will have a new work for Miami ICA for December.
Great.
So it's
and
quite close.
And you're making them at the moment?
Not yet.
Not
but
yet.
About as I said, I have to
get the inspiration.
Get out and bump into, I don't know, something random or weird.
Have you had anything random and weird in London while you've been here?
Not yet, actually.
Okay.
I mean, the street is more polite, I would say. I don't know, more civilized. No, but like more
apologetic. That's the British way. You apologize for things that aren't your fault.
Yeah. So it's not much craziness in the street, but maybe in Hong Kong because two pack, many people, so random things happen.
Yeah.
More crazy scenes there.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking to us.
By the way, what is your Instagram for people who follow your work?
It's called Nowhy. Oh no. Nowhy. Yes.
Yeah.
So
No way. Manamana.
Amazing. Well, Ping, this has been incredible.
Thank you, Ping. It's been incredible to meet you. And I've really enjoyed seeing the work as well in person, because I think I've experienced a lot of your work either just on a smaller screen or I did see the Freeze booth as well.
But
yeah, exactly. It's been a privilege to meet you. Thank you so much. And for images of Ping's work, you can visit our Instagram at TalkArt. We will be back very soon.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamant and Russell Tovey. Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in this episode. Recorded at Spiritland London by Anthony Shaw and edited by Gareth Isles. Subscribe to Talk Art on iTunes and Spotify. Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.